When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay.
are we singing the... It felt like you were going into the, like, Kanye West, good morning.
As much as I can appreciate the music of Mr. West, I feel that maybe... He's not an example that I should be attempting.
Maybe
to
he should have graduated instead of dropping out.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe he should have actually.
Yeah. Anyone who sort of like goes on record talking about how much they love a certain German dictator, historically speaking, is probably not someone that we really want to emulate here on the podcast.
Yeah. Graduation's a hell of an album, though.
Graduation's one album. Someone told me today on our last week's video, they responded to my comments. So they were asking for the Solofim deck list, right?
Yeah.
For that tournament we were talking about last week. I linked it in the last episode and they go, you know what? I'm so grateful that you sent this to me. I'm gonna put on Spotify and mute my pocket. I was like, damn, fucking baller.
Shout out to you.
Our lovely listener whose name is currently escaping me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's hilarious. That's fucking great.
And also, here's another response, because I don't think we respond to the shit we get in the last episode enough in this podcast. That is a joke. the amount of people who feel like maybe they trumped me with, well, Ian, Minotaurs are powerful.
I was ready to come into this episode. We kind of get off into the Kanye thing. I was very prepared to go into this episode as a deep fan of Greek mythology and be like, no, that is not what minotaurs are.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, is that
not how it works.
Yeah. And also, statistically speaking, minotaurs, as far as my understanding, are described as hybrids of man and bull. I don't know if you know anything about bulls v cow, you pedants, but cows be female. So eat that. And that's,
it's also very important to note that, minotaurs, When they talk about bull, there's like a very specific thing that a minotaur describes. Like a minotaur is not like, think about, do you remember the animated Disney movie Home on the Range?
I am not.
I'm pulling a deep cut.
As far as I'm aware, isn't that the one where... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Songs of the South. Never mind. I was like,
Go look up Home on the Range. Mm-hmm. The main characters in that movie are three female cows. And here's an even better one. Barnyard, right? Otis from Barnyard. That is a cow folk. Very distinctly not a minotaur.
Okay.
We are like creating this lore on the Mind Sculptors about what a cow folk is.
Yeah.
And I really hope that somehow we can make this like, make this
like a were cow scenario, you know,
a were
like,
cow scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when one were cow bites you, you turn into a were cow.
You turn into a cow. And so whenever,
yeah,
the
but like, no,
whenever the milk comes by, you turn into a cow.
I just want the furry community to be able to be like, man, why am I turned on by this cow? You know what I mean? That's kind of where I want the were cow to be, you know? Like, I don't want it to just be a cow. I want it to be like, you know, like
a hot dog, you know, cow.
Like a what?
A hot dog cow.
What is a hot dog cow?
No. A hot as in attractive.
No, they don't have to be dog.
Dog.
No. It doesn't have to be dog. Like, furries are not dog exclusive. And if they are, maybe see a professional.
They feel like they are generally canine.
I feel like a lot of the common furries that, like, especially the ones that sort of like get away with it, are like cat people. You know what I mean?
I had a friend back in
the I think maybe choosing the phrase get away with it sounds a little rude, and I don't mean that to come out that way. It's not a crime to be a furry. It's just a preference, I guess. Cal disagrees.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, furry, furry.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome to the episode. This is the Mind Sculptors podcast.
Welcome to the first
where sculptors. We give you the 411, the deep riveting information on the small distinctual differences between the mythical creature Minotaur and the theoretical creature type in magic, cowfolk.
Amen.
This is the hard-hitting journalistic integrity of the Mind Sculptors podcast. And very honestly, true. if we're being completely honest, is it that different than what the New York Times journalists do?
Yeah, this is. I think this is a good place to plant our flag. We're no different than the New York Times. Yeah, we're just as.
Grant, listen, there are some writers for the New York Times who are on a planet that is not Earth, and.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
But that's probably its own bit. So we were at Mox Masters over the weekend, and it was really great to see a lot of people in person, to get to play some games in person over the weekend and watch Miri just jump on top of Ian. It was the cutest thing I think I've seen all day. But yeah, it was fun to get out there. Fun to finally meet Ryan in person for the first time, which I think is wild.
Wait,
like,
really?
I feel like I've literally never been in the same place as Ryan until this weekend.
That's wild to me, actually.
Yeah, it is. We both have been like supposed to go to the same event multiple times, and then either him or I would.
Our members, Ryan has like randomly missed a bunch of events.
Yep.
Throughout the years, so like,
yeah. But it was good to see him. Good to finally meet up with some folks that I haven't seen in a while or just haven't seen before, and also not lose a lot of magic.
Yeah,
I didn't say win, but we specifically didn't lose a lot of magic.
Yeah,
one of those weekends.
Yeah.
Ian, you were in the Invitational. And you had a much different experience in the Invitational than I had.
Yeah. The Invitational was disappointing, personally. I just had like a lot of situations where, like, I don't know. If you go to an event like an Invitational, like it's an invite only event, right? Because you have to like earn a spot. You kind of expect not to be in situations where, like, people blatantly throw the game or just like make extremely obvious suboptimal plays or like go for win attempts when it's very clear that that is not a good move and you don't have any backup or counter magic or any shit like that. Just like,
right,
you expect people not to just just jam it at bad times when it's like obvious that that doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. But like that happened to me literally every round. So like even the round I won, I had to stop someone just making the absolute deepest clown town plays. You know what I mean? Like it was just like the quality of play was rather disappointing for a premier tournament. And I just had to like watch as like good players king made other players without like really much thought. And I was like, okay, that's really sure. I don't know why it keeps happening over and over again, but I guess this is where we're at with this tournament, right? Like, so it was definitely one of the more disappointing tournaments I've been to in very recent memory, for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting doing the metagame breakdown analysis of it to look at some of the deck choices that were made. Yeah.
I thought there would be like more blue farm in the open.
Yeah, I did too. I thought there was going to be. I thought the Invitational was going to be way more meta decks than it ended up being.
Yeah.
And it ended up being like a lot of fringe decks.
Yeah. I wouldn't say a lot. I think there is a handful of fringe decks with.
I mean, half of the field was fringe decks. So about half of the field was fringe decks, and half of the field was, made up by Tivit, Thrass Bruce, Kinnan, Rog'Sai, Thrass Vile, Dargo, Thrass, Atraxa, and Timnacrom. Mm. And then
I do not really know how to read this graph that you've put in front of me. It is very confusing.
All the way at the end.
Oh, entries. Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Entries, and then you have meta percentage, which is, how many there were next to it. But if you look at it, I mean, it's like a pretty even split between meta decks and some more off the wall decks. Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised Sisse only had one person show up with it.
I was also very surprised by that. Sisse was a deck.
Najeela,
that,
too.
Yeah, Najeela was under. Now, if you look at the opens, stats,
so many Najeelas.
Was the deck in the open, and it performed really well, won the whole tournament. But I
think it would also go for those who are not like directly in the loop on what the fuck we're talking about. So the Moxmasters Invitational was the invite tournament that you won points for throughout the year, right? And this was all invited players who had earned X amount of points either through the Playing with Power League or the Moxmasters tournaments, and it was all people who had gotten enough points to qualify for it. There was also a last chance qualifier the day before. The CEDH Open was just, hey, we're in the same building. This is for people who haven't qualified or, just like don't want to do the LCQ, right? Like, so there were definitely a lot of people in the open. It wasn't just like all people who didn't.
It was bigger. It was 68 to 10.
Yeah. So it wasn't like just people who didn't make the invitation. It was also people who were like weren't there for the invitation. You know what I mean? So like, I know like you participated, right? Like it was just people who wanted to be in a tournament space and knew that this was a big one in the Midwest, right? So
yeah.
So that's also like just a little important aspect to it. There were also people who went for the last chance qualifier, didn't make it and played the open as well. So,
And it is important to note that I did do a full open and invitational metagame breakdown between the two of them and put them together to just see what was played between the two overall. Yeah. And I did specifically leave out the LCQ because of the fact that it was a qualifier. So that is one important note that if you are on Twitter, you see my breakdowns. That is part of the explanation as to why that is.
You and Scotty just draws for days.
Yes. I went 0-2-3 over the weekend.
Yeah.
And my two that I lost were quite close to being drawn. So it was just like one of those days, like literally every game that I played, I made a win attempt. It was narrowly stopped. And then I was just like, cool, not lose, not lose, not lose, not lose. And that was how my day went.
So I went 1-2-2. So I had two draws. One of them was an intentional draw, which I sort of talked the table into. And then so that wasn't like there was only one draw that I had that was like we went to time, right?
Yeah.
But that round five loss, I mean, you've already heard about it a little bit, but
it was a tough one.
Yeah, for sure. So I was on a winning in. I basically had someone go for a win attempt when it didn't make sense to do so, and that fed my opponent with Heuristic Study and Esper Sentinel enough counter magic to exactly stop my win for my winning in, and then they won the turn after me. Yep. So that one was probably the hardest hit because I was definitely like, if I won that match, I was in top 16 and in a really good seeding. So yeah.
It was interesting because I was like looking at the stats and it was like pretty conceivable that a one win with like a handful of draws would get in if it was like depending on how your breakers went. Right. So there was like it was very interesting to kind of see how, because these were around 60 players, and it was 7 rounds for the open, 5 for the invitational, that like it made it so less wins would get you far.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so I would win 1, 2, and 2, and I was in 20th place or something like that.
Yeah.
So it definitely is like not the craziest thing, you know?
Yeah. But overall, it was interesting. There were some interesting decks that were played. If you have not heard, Malcolm Kettis is what won the entire tournament. It was the only... This is an interesting thing about Malcolm Kettis, because I noticed this when I was compiling the data for our power rankings video for next week. And it's the second month in a row where Malcolm Kettis is performing quite well, but can't meet the 10 deck threshold. And like over a course of a month, which is interesting to me that a deck like this, that is pretty consistently performing well, is not getting more attention than it's doing
the Kinnan thing, though. Like, I think it's for a long time. Oh my god, I can finally remember his name. Igor Vinko. I was trying to remember all weekend. Igor Vinko was absolutely just slapping tournaments with Kinnan, like for like almost a year and a half, and everybody was like just not picking up on the joke, right? Like, he was just absolutely dominating with that deck, and like people were like, okay, yeah, Kinnan's a thing, right? So then I think what happens is that people who aren't comfortable with the deck, in the same way that Samurai Dancer is, pick it up, play it, and it's just not singing the right tune, you know? And so then they just put it away because they perceive it as this kind of fringe deck. Now, do I think it's like the hottest deck in the format right now? No. Do I think it's, you know, a deck that can compete at the highest levels? Yeah.
It definitely feels like a deck that deserves a spot in the, like, 10 analysis. Right, like definitely feels like a deck that should be considered as one of the better decks in the format because of the fact that it's like pretty consistent. I really like that comparison to Kinnan. It really does feel like the like kind of is it Kinnan almost.
Oh yeah, but literally when I the first time I topped with this deck, I called it bad Kinnan. Like
it's really interesting. I like this a lot. I'm still kind of in the whole struggling to embrace it phase of existence, which is, you know, just kind of where I'm at, because it is so different than most things. And even the winning deck list, there's like a little decision trees with card includes where I'm like, I don't know that I would do it that way. So, you know, it's fascinating to see exactly how that all goes, like, long term. Deck that I really want to talk about that I was very, like, interested in was another one of the Final Four decks, and that was Kruk Silas by Richie. That was really cool to see make it as far as it did. We were just talking about this deck, too, which was what was really neat about it.
The funny thing was, I literally played it the night in between. I literally was just like having a couple drinks, playing games with folks, and Richie walked by and I was like, Richie, let me borrow your deck. And I played it, lost 6 coin flips in a row, and then was like, I don't get this deck. All right.
But hey, it works. Worked out for Richie pretty well.
Yeah.
I definitely think that there is something there with Krark. I think that Krark Sakashima might not be the deck that we want it to be, but I think Krark and some of these other partners might have a little bit more merit than we give them credit for.
And I look forward to hearing about how other people try that for sure.
Yes. One also, another interesting deck that did top 16 was a deck that finished at 16th. But it is one that you and I have both been foaming at the mouth to build for weeks now. And that's Yidris Maelstrom Wanderer.
Didn't Al finish 16th?
No, I have Kevin Simmons. Al is... Where did Al finish?
I'm looking at the actual bracket page.
Excuse me. 15th. 15th.
Okay. Yeah.
Kevin Simmons there. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Cody. I missed you. But yeah, Yidris there at 15th. You know, this was a deck that you and I have been talking about. It's not doing all of the things that we've talked about, but it's really cool and it plays Song of Creation. We talked to Kevin about it a little bit over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, because Kevin came running up to us and was like, hey. He was like, nice. I got I was so excited to see it. I really genuinely was.
Yeah.
I also did not realize who Kevin was until I was leaving the tournament and I was like, oh, you're Kevin.
I know that you. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So Kevin, if you're listening, sorry I did not pick up on who you were contextually sooner.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that if you don't tell me who you are on Twitter or Discord, I'm going to be like, hi.
Yes.
Cool. but what were some of the decks that you were like really impressed with over the weekend?
I mean, come on, let's talk about this Yidris deck a little longer, right? Like, I feel like we're really just burying.
I really want to address a particular card that is in this deck, and that is Inevitable Betrayal. Yeah. I
think as fuck.
Fucking love this. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this Yidris list overall? Like, what did you think of it?
It breaks my heart because no one will ever let me play this deck. I just don't ever think anyone will let me have fun like this.
Well, it's fine. I'll build it and I'll be the one to have the fun for the both of us.
Yeah. I don't love the necro lines. It feels like very anti Yidris, right? To me at least. But like also it's just very clean. That's like my one, like, I think disappointment with this deck is that like a lot of it feels like, oh yeah, Yidris is for sure there, but this definitely feels like a proactive Grixis list that also like sometimes pretends to be a Yidris deck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something I think that's necessarily bad, right? Like I think that's like a smart way to build it. I was a little surprised by No Bolas of Citadel.
I was also surprised by like no Harmonic Prodigy or something like that. Like those are things that like, so Harmonic Prodigy, this is in the rules text for Yidris. But if Yidris deals like double strike or double triggers, it give your spells 2 instances of cascade.
Yeah, I just don't think that's like the problem with Yidris. The problem with Yidris is like making the thing happen, right? I think one connect with Yidris usually just wins you the game. I think it's more the issue of like, will people let you do that?
That's fair. I also think that not playing stuff like Summer Bloom or Exploration is maybe a miss. I think
my favorite Yidris card is missing from here, which is Compost.
Yeah.
I think Compost is so sick in Yidris.
I think Compost is just kind of generally good, but, but like, one of the things with like Exploration and Summer Bloom is post-Gnaws, they are exceptionally
good. Yeah.
Because you can now turn the lands that are generally in Gnaws decks kind of just there as filler into like very like usable mana.
It's a ritual, right?
Yeah. Like they turn into rituals. And so I think that there's definitely something there that I like that a little bit more than I like Necro maybe. And so I think that might kind of go This kind of goes back to the whole like exploring what green brings to the table in these like Grixis shells. Yep. And I really feel like that, like, hey, you can play it like explore or exploration and summer bloom. Like those cards are the things that I think make green Nos decks interesting.
I can actually see exploration like slapping in this deck. I mean, 25 lands is definitely like the counter argument that I'm already hearing from people, right? But I don't know. It's really interesting. I mean, I truly love Yidris.
I guess I would. This is what I would say to the people who will give the counter argument for the 25 lands thing with exploration. Y'all, you play Rite of Flame. Like, you can't look me in the face, tell me Rite of Flame is better than exploration and a Nos deck. Like, we are not talking about these cards on the I am just playing them every turn. We're talking about them post. Your Nos deck is, generally speaking, looking to play these cards post.
Like, I think I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I feel like Rite of Flame, specifically for the like turn one talisman curve, is actually extremely important.
Yeah.
That's at least my personal experience with playing this archetype.
No, sure. Now imagine though, going land, exploration, land, Rite of Flame talisman.
Well, I mean, to be clear, right, like playing exploration is doing the same thing that Rite of Flaming into a talisman is, right? Yeah. Like, which is just like converting to, oh, I have another land next turn, or I have another consistent mana source, right? Which is what the talisman conversion does, right? So it's different, but it does the same effect, you know? Yeah.
And that's mostly what I'm kind of getting at. Maybe worded that poorly, but I think that, and also, again, I do think that the post-Nos part of it is like a huge benefit that makes it worth playing. But overall,
specifically, very much post-Nos, very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, congrats to Kevin for taking those sort of rock mods out, thrown out, and then just also showing up to like this kind of big tournament and being like, nah, fuck it, we ball. Like, there's a good amount of pricing on the line there, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to bring the absolutely untested spice. Like, let's go.
Let's fucking go, boys. Yeah, I really like it. I'm a big fan. Definitely going to be taking this as maybe my like. Kevin, I'm going to let you know right now, I'm probably going to use the skeleton of your deck for my version of this, because it's a nice, solid 99. I like a lot of them.
I also think maybe we should put a picture of the deck up as we go through this recording, probably.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Here's the other one we got to talk about.
Okay. We talked about Edric.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Edric. LJ is a fucking madman. I love LJ.
Was that ever in like question? LJ is like madman status.
This is a whole new level. LJ has been a fucking baller for a long time, right? But this is so for those who don't know, LJ took the craziest fucking pile to the top 16, and basically LJ's been playing Edric forever. Like, he used to play Flash Hulk Edric that had Azuri and Sage of Hours and 6 or 5 0 drop creatures. Yeah. It would take infinite turns with Flash. Like, that's how that deck would win. We were actually talking about it over the weekend. He was like, yeah, honestly, I would use Flash more defensively than anything else. And I was like, that's the craziest shit in the entire world. But
y'all, so this definitely subtlety.
Yeah. This is like Secret Commander's Kinnan Thrasios Edric. This is definitely one where I explaining it will merely just be a fraction of the understanding. So like, definitely put a picture of this on the screen, because this is crazy. Like, so I played this deck the night between, the same night I played the Grixis flips list, because I played against LJ in the Swiss, and he went and curved Kinnan into Seedborn Muse into Thrasios in our game, and I was like, LJ, what the fuck are you playing? And it, as the game ended, he goes, oh man, I was one turn away from Basalt Monolith. And I said, excuse me?
It's really hard to do this deck justice because it's really a wild pile of cards. And it was interesting. We were talking to LJ about this over the weekend.
Yeah.
Is he gave you some very specific advice on how to play this deck when you were playing it. And what was that advice?
The advice was literally like, do nothing. Like, I don't know how to describe it other than like literally do nothing. Literally we were going through the game. I kept an opening hand that was like nothing turn one, Fairy Mastermind turn two, like, and just, I don't know. Like I it might've just been like a, we were all drinking at like midnight kind of thing, but like, I don't know. It kept being in a good spot, right? And I would pass on every spell that wasn't winning the game, and maybe even some that were winning the game. And then eventually I played Edric, drew like two cards, and like I got there with infinite mana. And I was like, what is happening with this deck?
This deck is like, LJ's been playing this deck for like you said, since Flash Hulk's been around.
Yeah,
he played it in the MLC, did really well with it. He's done well with us at other events too. Like, this is not a new phenomena for LJ to play this deck and have success. And I think more people should try to maybe not write it off, right? Because I think, like, even myself, right? Like, I look at this and I'm like, oh, it's just LJ, right? But truly though, it has seen pretty consistent success in the hands of LJ. And yes, LJ is very good at what he does, but that doesn't mean he's going to be the only one to do well with it, right? Like, I think there is definitely more here. We're seeing that green blue is very, very, very good right now. So I definitely would encourage people to, you know, maybe not write this off. I do got to say, the subtlety in this list is fucking hilarious. I really like that include.
I don't even know what to say about this deck. It's something else. It really is. It's definitely a very like proactive deck, in the sense of like, it's just stuffed full of combos. It's got like all the old combos too, which is like the weirdest part for me about this list. But like, I don't even know how to describe what we're looking at here. Like, folks at home, just like go take a peek. Yeah, that's all I'm gonna say. Like, go take a peek.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's something. It's something.
Now, outside of the Invitational at the Open, there were two interesting pieces here with this. First of all, our good friend and your partner, Lewis Stardust, made top 16 with Paco and Halden, really great. Lewis, so much better than they give herself credit for, or themselves credit for. Wow, I really mixed pronouns there.
Yeah, you really beat that one.
But like, they are a much better player than they give themselves credit for, and they came out and did really well, and like, first top 16, hell yeah. I love the deck. We talked about it a lot the night before, and we're kind of like stressing on different includes and things like that.
After you guys all went to bed, I also stayed up with her and just like went over deck stuff for sure.
Oh yeah,
like, yeah.
So as far as this deck and like some of the deck includes, and it explained some of what this deck is doing for people who might not be familiar with Paco and Halden.
Oh yeah, I mean, so Paco and Halden is just like, it to me, it's like archetypal mid-range, right? Like, it is 100%. You get Paco down, you get Halden down. The idea is just like rip cards off of everybody's deck and eventually take control of the game. like, there's a lot of misnomers about this deck. Specifically, a lot of people are like, oh, it's a Voltron deck, you want to kill people with the dog, which is like true, but like, not
also in the not way true.
That you're gonna like aggro people, right?
Not like, true in the way you think it is.
Yeah, it does not ever like try and do the attack dog strategy, ironically enough, where you like latch onto one person and like try and just dead them, right? That's actually actively bad for the deck because you want more people in the game to give you more cards, right? Right. So the idea is you sort of like spread damage out until Paco is just like a one hit kill machine. And then you're like, okay, maybe now I start killing people or I just start attacking into somebody who has blockers, right? Like it's, but yeah, Lou has done a lot of work on the archetype. So it's the deck I won the MLC with.
It is.
The original OG MLC. And so it was a deck I sort of took over as my old co-host from CDH cast. Brayden originated the list. I sort of took it over when they stopped playing the format. And then it was a list I sort of put down for a little bit as my like tournament grinder arc started getting really intense, right? And basically because like it's a deck where it's like it's very easy for people to overestimate it in my hands and be like, oh, dog big must kill Ian, and I'm like, I don't know if I agree, but sure. and then so that's sort of why I left it. And then Lou and I were talking about decks a while ago, looking at decks for them to pick up on Scrybabies, and that was one of the decks they're interested in. I was like, hey, I literally have a list on the database, like
let's go.
There you go.
And they've really been championing it.
Yeah, yeah, the past three tournaments, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, Lou kicking ass, taking names. The deck's sick. Lou's also done a lot of the stuff in the deck that is like casual staples that are actually just logical choices in the deck.
Yeah,
that I was like, when I worked on it forever ago, I was really heavy on the breach package. So Lou's gone back to the season's past loops and wants to work on the breach package, but doesn't like
the breach package. Line. Feels like it's the worst part of the deck at all times, in my opinion.
So for me, it's very comfortable, but like I know, like executing that loop in a tournament setting is not something Lou is a big fan of. So they took it out and they're looking at playing it again, but not currently. Right.
Right.
So right now there's just Underworld Breach in the deck. No Brain Freeze, no LED. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I were to sleeve the deck up, I would have that in there, but I also understand the choice to not do so. Right.
Right.
So currently the Season's Pass loops are what Lou is using. For those who don't know, you need a top deck tutor or actually any instant sorcery tutor. You need an extra turn effect and you need Season's Pass. The idea is that you cast the extra turn. You use the instant sorcery tutor to go get your Season's Pass. You cast Season's Pass, pick up the tutor, pick up the extra turn effect. Season's Pass gets tucked into your library as part of the resolution of the spell. It's a 12 mana loop. Now, it might sound ridiculous. You're like, wait, 12 mana loop? That's a lot of stuff. Fun fact, Paco and Holden, it does not care. You are literally taking everybody's land drops. You never miss land drops with this deck. And the most
you're also
the
in like, Teemer, which is like maybe the best at making a lot of mana.
Yeah, it is like the mana colors for sure. And it's actually really easy to execute the loop. Way easier than I think a lot of people would expect. Also, like, think about how many pieces of fast mana you're taking from your opponents every time you like go through and rip cards off your deck, right? So no, I mean, the deck is sick. I love it. I'm really proud of Lua for absolutely killing the game with the deck. It's just all sweet stuff. For sure.
It's really cool. I love the include of Winged Boots. I think that's a really fun
Winged Boots. Include. You can thank Shaper's Vaunt for that one way back in the day.
Yeah. I love that include. I remember the night before we were talking a little bit about Lightning Greaves and how Lightning Greaves kind of feels like it
mid.
Yeah, it's mid. That's a card that I remember I said this in the event, and I think I still kind of hold this because I think I would rather that be a sword. So like a sword of fire and ice or like one of those, because it gives it some protection and then also does a thing. Which I think
I don't know that the list on here is actually correct, if I'm being honest, because I think the Lightning Greaves was taken out.
Yeah.
So I think there was an error with the deck list, because those were, I literally watched Lua update the deck in live time, and for some reason it did not copy over, even though we updated it 11 p.m. the night before. So there's a couple cards that were in the main deck that might not be on this deck. Because I broke down the decks last night.
Let me look at her list. Yeah. Oh, it's not. Hold on.
I don't know where the error occurred, but there was an error for sure.
But well, regardless, some good stuff in there. I do still kind of think that one of the swords is probably worth thinking about. The other thing that I wanted to talk about with this top 16 of at the Open was the long awaited return of Winota Joyner of Forces to top 16 greatness. Winota spanked me and I got utterly annihilated by we were very close to a draw, but it was just like one of those games where the entire game was just putting out fires, and it was all fires that Winota had started. It was impossible to deal with. And we had a Rog'Sai player at the deck or at the table. So they were just not doing anything to, you know, aid in the not dying effort. And then the other player was on Rocco. So it was just one of those situations where I was put in a position where my job at the table was to make sure we don't die. And only so much of that you can do in a game.
Yeah, for sure.
Winota is back. I don't know that this is like a huge return, but
like Winota's back in the way that, like, I don't know if Winota's back, but like, hopefully, you know?
This list made some interesting choices, playing stuff like Lina, Aura Touched Mage.
So I will comment on Lina. Lina is a card that we should have been playing forever ago. If I'm being honest, Lina is just really, really good, and definitely was like a very silly exclusion for a long time. The card is a Crater Hoof Behemoth in white.
It quite literally, like, when it came down, we were just like, oh, they're like, what, the only, literally the only thing that we can do to beat this is a board wipe. And it's pretty neat. What were your thoughts on this list and its performance?
I am surprised by it. It's definitely it's a weird deck in the sense that, like, it's going deeper into the stuff that I already think Winota has a problem with, right?
Like,
for me, a lot of my, like, current iteration of the deck is like building in more protective pieces and like stuff like that. So we don't just like lose to certain players. So we aren't wholly reliant on Winota. But this one is just absolutely every conceivable enabler and card is just like in the deck to create that early consistent game plan, right?
One thing I'll say is I got a pretty early Grafdigger's Cage down against it, and it just did not fucking matter, because it was just like, okay, cool, here's a morale and like a trillion and like a bunch of like freaking soldiers, deal with that. And you're like, all right, I guess I die.
Interesting. Yeah, morale's been one that was like really interesting, because like it feeds the ever living hell out of a Dockside, right? But then there's also the counter argument of like, does that matter?
Yeah, I think I'm now at the point with Dockside, with the whole feeding Dockside debate of everybody's feeding a Dockside and it's going to get fed no matter what. And I think not playing good cards because you don't want to feed a Dockside is playing to lose.
I agree. In the sense of I don't want to be so hyper focused on that reality that I end up in a scenario where, you know, we are basically like, how do I put this? I just don't want to get screwed, right? Like, I don't want to get screwed by it, right? And that makes sense. Yeah. And I don't want to hamper my own deck's potential for that potential reality. Yeah. That being said, I think there is something along the lines of like, there is a certain amount of just blatant irresponsibility that converts Dockside from, oh, Dockside is going to make a lot of mana, to, oh, Dockside wins the game no matter what without any consideration. Ha 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 ha. You've done broken.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
Because like every time Blue Farm, I've seen this happen where it's the difference between like dockside pass turn, I will win next turn. Mwahaha, curl mustache. And dockside, play Timna, play Krom, play other thing, go to combat, draw a bunch of cards, super protected win. It's a really different reality, and it's a play pattern.
And this is, again, kind of why I'm just like, hey, every white deck in existence, like this fucking Winota deck. Just
blind obedience. Just
blind obedience. I know I'm holding this.
Manglehorn's
like,
busted. I think let's talk about Manglehorn for a second.
Opener, and it looks like I'm just like shaking a knife around. But like, honestly, people need to play that fucking card. It's the goat in everything.
No, but like, on that note, like, in all actuality, Manglehorn has been like goated lately, and I feel like that card is just being underplayed for sure.
Manglehorn in fucking like just. Oh, but it doesn't hit an enchantment. It doesn't fucking matter.
I love when you get so flustered that you're just like, it's just stupid people. Like,
it's because I have so many. Because what happens when that happens? All right, here, we're going to get deep into my Callahan here.
Soapbox, go.
Basically what happens when I like stumble over my words and I can't find what I'm saying. And it's just like, and it sounds like you're just quickly changing radio stations, is I have so many thoughts concurrently that I'm unable to find the one to say.
No, that's like a pretty normal ADHD symptom. That's fine. It's very funny when you get so passionately frustrated at players. that's the part that amuses me, is when you're like, they're just so stupid.
I'll get them next time, Spider-Man. It's just like,
kids these days don't even play the Manglehorns.
Kids these days don't even play the cards that win you the game. They just play that stupid breach card. It's just like,
true.
There's so many things, and I know I've said this on the show so many times, but eat your goddamn fruits and vegetables. Like, come on. Like, if you're gonna be on these aggressive strategies like this, at least have some deterrent. And I am all for, like, this Winota build, for what it's worth, I love. I think it's a very interesting way to take it. I think that it is aggressive and it gets around a lot of issues, that because it has so many token enablers that you're just kind of like, it's fine. Here's a Winota, or here's a bunch of creatures. And so, like, I think that is a good strategy and is super viable. On the same hand, play a blind obedience, for Christ's sake. Play something that helps disrupt. I'm not asking you to be on Null Rod. I don't think you need to do that. I'm not asking you to be on Graph Digger's Cage. I don't, like, obviously don't do that. I'm not asking you to be on like Collector Oof and your green decks. All I'm asking you to do is include really good disruption pieces that don't bother you at all. Like, they don't impact you. Just play them. That's it. Just play. Just play the cards. Play the good cards. Why is that hard? Why is playing good cards such a fucking battle that I come on this show and I have these rants? Because that's how I feel about it. It's just like, I'm begging people to just play good cards. Like, I spent months trying to convince people that Shieldred was worth trying and made an impact, and everybody's like, no, it doesn't do enough, it's only 2 life. And then they sit down and they're at start at 38 life and draw cards and get attacked once, and suddenly they're at 10 and like, oh fuck, I can't use this Gnaws in my hand. And it's like, yeah, no shit. That's why we had a guy this weekend who played out, I had a Shieldred out and he had a Rhystic Study, and literally me and the other two opponents saw that, and all of us knew we are going to feed the ever living fuck out of this Rhystic Study. We're not paying for a single trigger. And guess what? He just drew himself into death. Like, it made no fucking sense. And I just, okay, I'm better. I'm good.
That was everything I wanted from today's episode. Like, you've ranted a couple times on the podcast. I don't know if I've seen you pop off on a podcast episode quite like that.
Yeah. It.
Do you feel better? Do you want like a cigarette?
I really do. We were talking about mango jewels the other day.
Oh no.
Because we're watching the Netflix documentary about Jewel. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the mango ones. I was like, damn, I really do miss those. It's just like, it's probably not a great feeling.
Also, funny update. I did just get a text from Lua going, oh, my Eminence deck is wrong. And then I panicked, but then they admitted it was on their end.
Amazing.
I was like, cool. Amazing. I didn't want to out my partner and uploading the wrong deck list. So that's Amazing. Good that it was not their fault.
Oh, my goodness. But no, it, like, honestly, just play good. Play good cards, guys. They're so generically good and they don't impact you. Just Blind Obedience fucking will stop. You know that whole man, I'm feeding a Dockside a bunch, right? And I'm worried that somebody's just gonna win with it. Guess what? They intertapped. Who gives a shit? Like, just fucking
I like the fuck it, we ball argument. It's good.
I'm physically hot now. I like broke into a sweat.
I'm dead.
My skin is wet. Okay. Like,
oh my God.
I don't do that very often.
Yeah,
I don't do that really, very often. I'm on the glad podcast, we have a, I should say. I do that a lot in person.
Yeah. I'm glad we have a moment for the podcast audience that really sticks at it, you know, for like the middle episode people, you know, people who are actually like listening to the whole thing. Like they're getting some good shit right now.
They're getting the good stuff. We hide it all the way at the end. And it's also a nice like window into what your life is like when I like call you. Because I will call you and like rant about like something basically like this or some bullshit. And it's very,
a lot of my good friends are ranters. I'm noticing. Yeah. Like I'm thinking about you and Charles and I'm like, man, I can leave the phone down and just be like, And then y'all.
The funny thing is though, is like, it's very funny because like Charles and I rant in very different ways. Right. Charles will give you like a doctoral thesis argument rant.
Sure.
And I give you the fucking, they're turning the frogs gay. Like that's the energy I bring to my rants.
No, I think your rant energy is like, it's the thing. It's all back to the planting the flag argument. You know what I mean? It's like, this is our last battle and we will fight to the we will bleed them.
We may die.
Yeah.
Many of you will die. But no, it's funny because whenever I go on a rant like that, I always do feel myself being like, I'll internally be feeling like, Cal, you're one step away from Alex Jones. Chill. Like,
woof.
I'm just, you know, I'm the leftist. That's fine. I get it. It's the same type of stream of consciousness, like ranting, like is why I compare it that way, because that's how it is. It's very like stream of consciousness. Here is a rant. I'm angry that they are turning the Winotas into not stack stacks. Is that the CEDH equivalent of that, but is incredibly less problematic?
I mean, my other thing with Winota is like, they play so many rule of laws that you're like, yeah, sure, you can play your Dockside and then wait a turn. Don't play rule.
Every rule of law that got played against me this weekend actively helped me or another player out.
I think Winota's the exception in the rule, but yeah, I get that for sure.
Winota, you play the creature ones, right? And they just add to the total, and they're just kind of like passive value. But like, I think a really good example is like in that game with the Shieldred I was talking about. The like rule of law, I was actively happy about. And then when it got removed, I was like, cool, here's the time to like move. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things that I think unless your deck is very specifically designed to take advantage of rule of law in ways that other decks cannot, like Winota is a great example of that. You playing rule of laws is not good magic. How I feel about it. I don't think they're good.
Yeah.
I don't think they're good. I've seen them hand too many games away to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, now I'm just double checking this list to make sure the rule of laws are in there.
They are. They're playing all of the creature ones and then the non-creature one. And so it's like they're not on the Phyrexian one, which also feels fine, but
You should not be on that in modern. I did a whole breakdown of this fucking deck and didn't even point out that they're not on Kiki lines.
Yeah, this is very much a deck that is like, I'm gonna beat your face in with a bat, and like and mad respect to it. Like I very much as somebody who loves that strategy, mad respect. But just eat your fucking fruits and vegetables. Play a blind obedience. It's not that hard. Take out the Thalia that is actively bad and put in the blind obedience that is actively good.
Yeah, I'm with you. Zealous Conscripts with no Kiki is a wild
reality. It's just a free get control of something.
Yeah.
Like, you're not playing it because it's a combo piece. You're playing it because it's just kind of free, right?
No,
like,
I 100% am playing it because it's a combo piece.
Well, yes, but I'm saying here it's just kind of free to play. But
sure.
Any other interesting decks from this weekend that you Dargothrass really had a good weekend. Dargothrass kind of just disappeared for a little bit and then popped up this weekend and was like, hey, don't forget about us.
I mean, so shout outs to the Tevesh's in the open for some reason.
Went off.
There were three Tevesh decks in the top 16. There was two Chrom Tevesh and one Thrasios Tevesh, which I was just like, what? This is a thing.
Yeah.
and not like I've seen it before, don't get me wrong, but like just not frequently. So I was a little bit shocked with that. That's about it for those, though. Like the Tevesh presence was interesting.
I did think it was interesting. I talked about this on the Twitter breakdown of it, but the non-Rog'Sai Grixis decks are, on average, performing more consistently well than Rog'Sai.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to put that out in there. Rog'Sai players, I know I have a nice home in your heads. And
It's like, I don't know. The thing is, every time someone makes the argument of like, oh, well, you know, Zane's been doing so well with the deck, right? It's like, okay, so like that might be a really good deck for Zane. But every other Rog'Sai player I know is like, yeah, this deck feels unplayable right now. Yeah. So, and, you know, they aren't saying it that explicitly, but every time they go to an open tournament, they're like, no one ever lets me do anything. They always think I'm going
to win. We got our Rog'Sai player in the game that I was playing against Rog'Sai. Like, turn three, he was at one life and had been flashing an ad nauseum in his hand the entire game. And I was just sitting there, like, holding up counter magic because I knew he had ad nauseum in his hand.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, we made sure we killed him very quickly.
As you should.
And it was just like, I stand by this. I'm going to save this for next week when we do our power. Because I have a lot of thoughts about the deck. I do think it's good, but I do think that there is a lot of hype around the deck that needs to just be. Y'all need a way to blanket. Just go take a nap. it's fine. You know.
I also think we would be doing a disservice to not shout out Kai.
Dude.
Made war with Narset.
That Narset deck is sick.
It's definitely sick. I always ask Kyle, like, how do you win if your breach gets exiled? And he goes, yeah, their breach.
The answer is like, you don't.
Yeah, like, that's, well, there's also, funny enough, Pull from Eternity. And
yeah. Like,
that's one I have not thought about in a very, very, very long time. But honestly, I think this is literally, like, if there was a list that plays Pull from Eternity, I think it is this one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really neat. I am quite like proud of Kai, because Kai has been doing like, Kai has just been very consistently playing this deck across a lot of tournaments, and he doesn't always do well with it, but he sticks with it, and it just, that consistent sticking with it, like, it makes me want to go back to, like, just pounding the pavement with Arden a little bit, because it's like, you know, I know something's there, and it's just like, you know, stick with it, man. But
yeah. I think, well, Kai's always been a pretty good player.
Are you saying I'm not?
But has not really, like...
Are you saying I'm not?
No, that's not even close to where I'm going. But has, like, never really, like, had the results to, like, consistency and results. But as soon as Kai picked up this deck, been significantly way more results. So, like, clearly you found a niche, you know, take a lesson from Wounded Satellite, play one deck forever, and just let it happen, yeah, you know?
It's cool. I love the deck. Love Kai, and it's good to see it doing well. Deck is really cool. Also, just again, Richie, I thought my brain was like, we haven't talked about this, but we definitely did. But honestly, dude, just Richie's Kark Silas deck, it's so cool.
Yeah,
big congratulations. And also need to make sure that I cannot understate this enough, but the Kedis Malcolm deck, like, I said this on Twitter, but you know, we saw all of these meta decks go into this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then none of them made the top four except Sisse. And it feels weird to call Sisse a meta deck, right? So it's like, feels like the meta is in a very open spot. I know that there is some amount of, you know, like you said with this tournament where it felt like there were some bad plays happening. But overall, I think that this has kind of felt consistent over a string of tournaments. Is that a lot of stuff is viable, and that feels really good to feel or like say and think about.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of stuff that is like very playable right now, which isn't always the case, which is pretty cool. So I think the format's still open. I still think the format is not as open as it could be, and Bowmasters is 100% responsible for that. I wish it wasn't here. To be honest, I still think it's a scourge on the format, but as of right now, it's, you know, we're still able to have a certain level of diversity present, which is really nice.
Yeah.
That is not always.
I do also think that some of the diversity is a little tamped down by the ever, like, the what's it called, the pervasiveness of Dockside. And, you know, I think Dockside kind of homogenizes a lot of stuff. And
I would be very interested to see what happened if Dockside was banned. I'm not excited about it because it would kill several of my favorite decks. But like, you know, it is.
Yeah, I think Dockside is a card that, you know, my stance on this, and not to get too into the weeds on it, but I kind of feel like you either have to unban Primetime and give green like a bone, or you need to ban Dockside because they're the same card in my opinion, and one is much more egregious than the other. So I feel like, and it, for those who can't figure out which one is the egregious one, it's Dockside, not Primetime. So like I think you either ban both or you unban one, right? And that's how I feel about it. And for what it's worth, I am much more a proponent of unbanning Primetime than I am a proponent of banning Dockside. I would love to see Primetime get him.
Yeah, I like. That's really interesting. I don't know. I like. I haven't thought about that comparison, but Dockside is definitely more egregious in a lot of circumstances.
Yeah, it is much more offensive than primetime has or ever was, honestly. And in all, like the thing about Dockside that I think is the part that there's this interesting narrative that it's a CEDH card, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. It gets play in all levels of Commander. Yeah. And the narrative that it is only a CEDH card is like, that is true about Thassa's Oracle. It's not true about Dockside. And I think that is a very important thing to remember. And again, this is not an argument for banning Dockside. This is an argument for unbanning primetime. Like it's very much a think a I like less ban, generally speaking. But I could do a whole thing about bans. What are your kind of final thoughts about the weekend? Kind of closing thoughts.
Closing thoughts. It was I guess we didn't even talk about like the most controversial thing for this tournament, which was the finals match.
Well, I didn't watch the finals match. I was on the road.
No, the format of
the format. Oh.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, it was a best of two finals. Meaning that like there's a solid chance that the finals match could either be like 90 minutes or 8 hours. And there's really no determining that. For those curious, best of two meaning like first you play until one person has two wins. Right. First person to two wins. So there's a world where you play five untimed games in the finals. And that also creates scenarios where people will spite play because, you know, say, for example, let's talk about this weekend, right? So say Kai wins game one, right? And then Richie is in a situation where next game, Kai is about to win. Richie can't pay for this Pact of Negation in hand, but Richie doesn't want to, you know, lose the entire tournament. So Richie goes, okay, well, Pact of Negation, Kai's win, and King make the next person because I don't want to give Kai the second win. Right. And then that happens like three more times until you run out of people to king make and feel safe. Right. And it's an awkward format. The time thing is huge. Right. Once again, you could probably. I mean, so we literally played an entire league like this 2 years ago. Right. And literally I had one day, once again, 90 minutes, one day the week afterwards that took 8.5 hours. Right. Like. It's just not, you just can't, there's no logistical way to like make it actually happen. It's just awful. truly. So,
yeah, I do not like that. Also, I think so my biggest critique of the Invitational is that I think it should have been online. I don't think that doing a tournament series online and then having the finals be in person makes sense. Yeah. I think it alienates so much of the people.
Yeah, we lost a lot of European players who are very good.
And even some American people who just can't make it. I think that if you're going to make it, if you're going to do this invitational thing and you want it to be in person, then you got to have in-person events to lead up to it. And if you want to have an online tournament, then it needs to be an online invitational. And I think that's fine. And I'm all for that. I'm all for both of those things. But I think the in-person invitational, and I also think it's important to note, you can do a Mox Masters Open and an online invitational. Like they do not have to be exclusive to each other. I think it is very important to... But like I said this to Ryan, that was my biggest critique of the event was I don't like the, you have all of this build up to it and then like a big chunk of your players that are qualified can't make it.
It sucks.
Yeah, that's really the biggest knock I have on it. But overall, I loved it. It was great to see Ryan. It was, the Open went really well. I really liked the Open format. And want to shout out the judging staff who I thought did an incredible job.
Awesome. Very
professional. I think one of the things, and this is something that I've said about, I said this while we were at the event, is really like the choice to have Aerosmith as the Michael Aerosmith, for those who are not familiar with him, one of the preeminent judges in the Magic community, having him be your head judge for the event is very, 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 very. He does not put up with bullshit. And we saw that time and time again over the weekend where he just was like, nope, nope, nope. This is what it is. And he's reasonable, but also just doesn't put up with bullshit. And was great to see that from the judging staff, especially after having like a couple experiences with some really questionable recent. So good on you, Eminence. Good on you playing with power. That was a great event. Really loved it.
I will say, I don't think he made this call, but there was definitely some judge controversy in the tournament that did determine who made the final.
Yeah, match. I think they're, you know, obviously judges aren't perfect. And I say this about like, you know, like referees in sports are kind of the same way, right? Where it's like there are going to be times when referees make mistakes on the field and it's going to impact the outcome. But I think as a group overall, it was pretty well done. And I very much appreciate it. But yeah, that's that. We've got Atlanta coming up, which is the next big event. And then it's kind of quiet for a bit, which is kind of nice.
Yeah,
it's been super busy over the summer months and heading into.
I'm hoping there's some sort of like online tournaments coming in December and stuff like that at the very least, because I it's been crazy as far as like we've had big tournaments, right? Like it's been all of the big tournaments of the year have been within the past month, basically, right? Like it was a Time Twister tournament, and then the 10K Invitational, right? So like there's a lot of big stuff in a row, and I just, and then there's an 8K coming up right next month, and I kind of just want like a tournament where I'm like, cool, I can bring a cool deck and not be like, man, I'm throwing a couple thousand dollars down the pipeline, right?
Yeah, definitely agree with you. You know, if you would like to sponsor, by the way, either Ian or myself or both, go to Atlanta and rep your brand. You can reach out to us and hit us up, email either of us, and yeah, we'd love to do that. Also, speaking of which, make sure to head on over to patreon.com/thebindsculptors and get that. Help us out. We've got some new patrons who have been joining recently, and we really appreciate that. Ian and I are planning to, start of the year, have the Patreon kind of more active, have an actual patron like system that isn't just there. So keep on the lookout for that. It's like we want to do it right. And Ian's been busy, and now that things are kind of quieting down, we actually have time to be like, okay, how do we do this? That is something to keep on the radar. And then also, Ian, put your coaching hat on for me. We got Coach Ian here.
Hey, it's me, Coach Comedian MTG. Now, hey, everybody.
I'm going to get you a hat.
This is the one.
Like a just a black hat with a white text that says Coach Ian on it, or we can get you like a Deion Sanders like branded like how he has Coach Prime. Like we can get you like a Coach
Sure, Ian. I know what you're talking about. Definitely. All right. Here, let me do a little bit of a stinger. Oh, hey everyone. While we're here, this the very serious part of this episode in which I seriously pitch coaching. But no, for real, hey, like I have pretty good record at these things. Won two of the three tournaments this month. So if you're interested in being coached by someone who has done pretty well in the CEDH format, you should come check me out. There's also, you know, I've been doing a lot of brewing sessions lately with people, which is really nice to kind of get back to that part of the coaching. Where I did a coaching session with somebody where I was helping them tune their five color Garuda deck yesterday, And they were like, yeah, I don't know, I come to you because you seem to get really excited about cool stuff. And I was like, I'm very excited about this very cool thing. So like, yeah, if you're interested in any of those processes, feel free to reach out to me, me@mtg@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, Discord, all those places. Yeah. And my other channel, obviously, youtube.com/@comedianmtg.
The funniest YouTube channel on.
Yes. The funniest, not funny YouTube channel on the internet.
Well, how do you want to end this show? There's a lot of different ways that we can do it. We've done the abrupt stop a lot recently, which I don't know that I think we got to find something else.
Yeah, yeah, no, like I don't need that to be like our brand. I think it's just like it worked, yeah, you know,
it did its job for a few.
It did its job. You get it, audience.
I can always threaten the audience.
You know. Whoa.
Go to the Patreon.
No, I like that. Yeah, yeah. Listen. Okay. I got it. We do sort of like a good cow, bad cow kind of thing, right? Look, this other like other cow over here, because there's already enough cows in CEDH. look, cow's not gonna cut you. Just go over to Patreon. They're not gonna freak out. They're not gonna go on a rant like they did before. Okay. But if you're the Spotify audience, apparently you're making us that cheddar. Okay, Spotify audience, we love you. Yeah, absolutely. So to Spotify audience, keep being great. And if you're on YouTube, fuck those Spotify guys. I'm so sorry. They're just paying our bills. YouTube audience, stop being cheap. Go over to patreon.com/comedianmtg and we won't have a problem, baby. You get it.
You know, if you hate ads, use YouTube Premium and then we get the ad rev from that though.
Boom. Or, hey, hear me out. Go crazy here. Do both, you know, just put that Spotify on you, lay it down on your table.
You can support the creators you like, just $15. I don't know why this turned into a like plug for YouTube Premium.
Yeah, Premium. I think YouTube needs to be lining our pockets for us to go.
Well, I mean, they do line our pockets a little bit, but you know,
not in the way we should be plugging
YouTube Premium. I will say though that when it comes to ad rev, YouTube Premium does pay the bills. So, you know.
Okay. So on the other hand, YouTube Premium is pretty hot. Maybe
you know what? Actually, you fuckers who watch our podcast on YouTube with Adblock, specifically, fuck you.
Yeah. Specifically, actually, yeah, like, fuck that.
Specifically, fuck you.
Because, like, you can do that on Spotify and not really have to worry about it. So like specifically, Cal's right. Go fuck yourself.
I get it. Listen, I understand ads are annoying, but there's a reason why I pay for no ads on Hulu. Right.
Right.
I pay the extra money. For
that.
How do you think? Listen, you can't just consume free content and expect it to continue. That's not how the world works.
Yeah.
You need money. I gotta pay that rent.
That's true.
So that they can continue to not fix my fucking elevator.